My special thanks to the cardinals who are with us today, and in a special way, my thanks to the papal nuncio, Archbishop Carlo Maria Vigano. Thank you for representing our Holy Father, Pope Benedict XVI, and please convey to him the sentiments of loving communion of all here present. My greetings and my thanks to the archbishops and bishops who join us today, as well as the priests, deacons, and religious and laity of the Archdiocese of Baltimore, as well as honored guests from the Archdiocese of Washington, the Diocese of Bridgeport. I greet and welcome my dear parents, as well as family members and friends from southern Indiana and many other places, together with interfaith and ecumenical representatives and those who represent state and local government. Welcome to one and all. Doesn't this seem like a good day to reflect on what a bishop does? Yes, it does. One answer to that question was given by a third grader at the convent of the Sacred Heart School in Greenwich, Connecticut, on the occasion of one of my visits. Asked what a bishop does, she enthusiastically put up her hand and said, "He moves diagonally and protects the king." What he's supposed to be was brought home to me in this magnificent Cathedral of Mary Our Queen about 17 years ago. It was here, in this very sanctuary, that Cardinal Keeler and Cardinal Hickey presented me to Pope John Paul II for the first time as a newly ordained bishop. Here I stood before Pope John Paul II, an ideal priest and a sacred bishop, whose life spoke more eloquently even than his words about my vocation. And after I had been presented, I sat down and listened as John Paul II proceeded to describe the unique heritage of this great Archdiocese of Baltimore. This afternoon, I want to express a common debt of gratitude that we owe to William Cardinal Keeler, who so loved and fostered the living heritage that is ours. Cardinal Keeler, thank you so very much.
But never did it occur to St. Paul to be
present the gospel as mere ideas, as an alternative philosophy. Rather, in the public square, St. Paul preached Christ crucified and risen as the source of life itself, of meaning and of salvation. Yes, his words were met with skepticism, even ridicule. Yet, among some who heard him, some came to believe. Few people in history went to war very outwardly than did Pope John Paul II, as he traveled the breadth and length of the globe, preaching the gospel. As indeed his successor, Pope Benedict XVI, continues to do. In doing this, they're teaching us all how important it is not only to bring the gospel into the public square, but indeed to defend the right to do so for ourselves and for all believers. Standing in this cathedral, Blessed Pope John Paul II said, and I quote, "The challenge facing you, dear friends, is to increase people's awareness of the importance for society of religious freedom, to defend that freedom against those who would take religion out of the public domain and establish secularism as America's official faith." He went on to say it's vitally necessary for the very survival of the American experience to transmit to the next generation the precious legacy of religious freedom and the convictions which sustain it. With the bishops from this mid-Atlantic region recently visited Pope Benedict XVI, he spoke forcefully about the need to uphold religious liberty in our country. And he said this, "With a long tradition of respect for the right relationship between faith and reason, the Church has a critical role to play in countering cultural currents which seek to promote notions of freedom detached from moral truth." He went on to say that the legitimate separation of church and state cannot be taken to mean that the church must be silent on certain issues, nor that the state may choose not to engage or be engaged by the voices of committed believers in determining the values that will shape the future of the nation. And friends, we do not seek to defend religious liberty for partisan purposes, as some have suggested. No, we do this because we are lovers of a human dignity that was fashioned and imparted not by the government, but by the Creator. We defend religious liberty because we are lovers of every human person, seeing in the face of every man and woman the face of Christ, who loved us to the end, and who now calls on us to love and serve our neighbor with that same love he bestowed on us. We uphold religious liberty because we want to serve those in need while contributing to the common good in accord with the Church's social teaching, and to do so with compassion and effectiveness through Catholic Charities, the largest private provider of human services in the state of Maryland. We do this because Archbishop John Carroll's generation of believers and patriots gave us a precious legacy that has enabled the Church to worship in freedom, to bear witness to Christ publicly, and to do massive, amazing works of pastoral love, education, and charity, and to do them in ways that are true to the faith that that inspired them in the first place. And yes, we defend religious liberty in fidelity to the wisdom of James Cardinal Gibbons, who withstood in the breach those who said it wasn't possible to be a practicing Catholic and a loyal American. I belong to a country, he said, where the civil government holds over us the aegis of its protection without interfering with us in the legitimate exercise of our sublime mission as ministers of the gospel of Christ. Our country, he said, has liberty without license and authority without despotism. Now, dear friends, you and I must be loyal Americans by being bold and courageous Catholics.
Join me.
Bishop Rozanski, and for our wonderful retired bishop, auxiliary bishop, Bishop Newman. Let's pray for our priests and our deacons, who serve our parish communities every day without coming to cost. Dear brother priest, how happy I am that so many of you shared with me your hopes and dreams and concerns for this local church you love so dearly. I sense your ardent desire for an ever deeper sense of solidarity and unity, as also your desire that the church remain a strong and compassionate presence in the city of Baltimore and in all parts of the Archdiocese, including Western Maryland. You seek to marshal and shape all its God-given resources for the sake of the gospel, and for the sake of those who serve or should be served, including the blessing of a wonderful African-American community, and the blessing of a growing presence of Spanish-speaking Catholics in our midst. And because all of us so cherish the Easter, because all of us are part of an archdiocese, with the oldest seminary in the United States and the second oldest, because we love the priesthood to which you dedicated your lives, let us never be content to think that God isn't still raising up priestly vocations. To those of you who think that Christ may be inviting you to follow him in the priesthood, or the consecrated life, I make this personal appeal. I ask you to open your hearts generously. Do not delay your response. The Lord will help you to know his will. He will help you to follow your vocation courageously. On this installation day, I wish to thank and acknowledge women and men in consecrated life who serve so generously and effectively in the Archdiocese. With you, I think of the canonized and beatified religious who served here, St. Elizabeth Ann Seton, St. John Lennon, Blessed Francis Xavier Seals, even as we give thanks for Mother Mary Magdalene, whose call is to the and even as we remember with joy the visits of Blessed Mother Teresa. Today we should pray for the Lord to strengthen our families, that they'll give us the grace to renew family life in this archdiocese and beyond. Too many discussions about contemporary lifestyles center only on adult feelings and overlook the needs of children and young people. Let us be a church that honors our elders, sustains those in the prime of life, but indeed a church that welcomes our young with enthusiasm and joy, and partners with parents in the task of forming the next generation. I thank our parents and our educators who, at considerable sacrifice, sustain our excellent Catholic schools in a time of great challenge. Earnestly pray also for strong, active, faithful lay leadership throughout the Archdiocese. To those of you who in loving service generously place your talents at the service of the Church's mission, I thank you. I thank you also of the Order of the Holy Sepulchre, the Order of Malta, the Knights of St. Peter Clayburgh, the Knights of St. John, and many other dedicated groups within the Church. Yet donning my cap as Supreme Chaplain, allow me to single out the Knights of Columbus. What a surprise. Spirit of charity, unity, fraternity, and patriotism. Thank you for your strong presence in this state of Maryland, where Cardinal Gibbons ordained the visionary founder of the Knights of Columbus, the Venerable Father Michael J. McGibbon. Let's pray also.